Gotta hit the record button. Hi, everybody. This is your host, Jerry Gomez, on SNC Radio, and I'm joined with my dear-hearted friend, Zach Mady, correct?
Yep, Mady.
Yeah, look at that. And never had to call you by your full legal name like that, so that's pretty interesting.
Yes, Mr. Jerome Comis.
Oh, no.
Oh, yikes.
Okay. So, basically, the point of having you in the studio is to figure out what's going on in terms of your new club on campus.
Yes. So
before we do that, I want to know who you are, what's your class and major, and what's going on after college. You got a plan?
Plans for after college? Oof.
I know. Only junior year.
Ask me in like 6 months. But no, we can touch on that a little bit. So as I said before, my name is Zach Mady. Most of the time they hear me known as Wrecker Scion, whether it be Big or my in-game name for League of Legends. I am a psychology-theology double major, and after I graduate, I'm a little bit tossed up on what I want to do right now. I love both psychology and theology, and I definitely know that I want to go to grad school, but pursuing either one of those paths, not so certain yet. Kind of the rough sketch that I have right now is that I want to pursue psychology, be a sports psychologist for a bit, with aim on coaching in esports. And then after that, you know, have a nice career for a bit, potentially go back to school to get a higher degree in theology.
Nice. So I guess obviously we're here to talk about the esports club on campus, but how does that major, I know you were saying that it ties in, you know, how you want to be a team psychologist for an esports team. What kind of psychology is required of an esports team? Or should we wait for a little later? Why don't we start from the beginning?
Yeah.
What is an esports team?
So esports is kind of an umbrella term, is the way I always like to coin it, right? So we look at sports. You think of football, soccer, golf, you know. Esports is the realm of competitive video gaming, right? So we have games like League of Legends, Dota, Smash, all that require certain skill sets that are developed over time, just like any other sport. And you'll see a stratification of different skill levels, you know. So we still have amateur scenes, high school varsity teams, professional teams, collegiate teams, just like you'd see in a traditional sports scene. So really it's just a broad definition for a collection of competitions that are specifically done through video games.
So essentially, it is a sport that instead of changing, I think a lot of people argue when they talk about a sport is you have to be playing the same thing. Like, so if you're in NASCAR, the reason that people, you can be in different zones of NASCAR and all this other stuff, whereas in football, you're all doing the same thing on the field. So what I'm hearing from you is that the physical game is the playing field, and the person's skill can be applied to different playing fields, but the team can play on different playing fields as well.
Yes. So I guess, honestly, the way that you can look at it is literally just as any other sport, right? Certain players are good at certain games. Within those games, there are certain skill sets. For example, League of Legends has been one of the top esports for the last 10 years. And in that game, there are different lanes, different positions. Just like, you know, have a quarterback or running back. In League, we have jungler, mid laner, support, AD carry, top laner. You know, like we have these different roles, different skill sets. And that can vary across games. So in Call of Duty, you'd have someone that's a flex player, a sub, or an AR, depending on, you know, what type of gun class that they specialize in. And it all depends on, you know, the game that you're playing, right? You wouldn't try to compare a soccer player and playing a specific position to a football player trying to play a certain position. You know, it's stratified in a lot of the same ways that traditional sports are. It's just a different arena, right?
Right.
It's a different kind of field. Instead of playing on a football field, you're playing in the Rift in League of Legends. Or in Smash, you're playing on a different stage, you know, compared
right.
to, you know, ice rink like hockey.
So another comparison would be is if you were all on, you know, a sailing team, let's put it this way, and your team all races for the same goal, but you're all using different boats. So you're not racing against each other, but you all have the same end goal to win the game.
Yeah.
Just in whatever specialty case you have.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see it in esports, like Smash, it's individual, right? But then League of Legends is team-based. That's a game that's played in teams of five. Smash is one-on-one. Or you can have doubles as another popular variant of Smash, but the majority of competition is 1v1. So it really, I mean, I always look at it like, just like you look at traditional sports, you have team sports, and you have individual sports.
Yeah, okay, okay. So here's another question. What's the reason that you pushed to have it as a club? Because I know on campus there are tons of people who love playing. I mean, they're our friends, but there are tons of people who want to play video games but are not necessarily competitive in the same role as one would think for esports.
Mm-hmm.
So what pushed you to push those people to join your club instead of saying, hey, it's a Saturday night, why don't you come on over and we'll just play?
So I got a twofold answer for you. The first is that we are the SNC Esports and Gaming Association. We're viewing it as there are players on campus who want to be the best, right? But we also have people who just want to game casually and with their friends. So we want to really open up to both communities, right? I think one good way that we're starting to show that is that with Smash, we have a weekly called Smash Fridays. It takes place in the basement of GMS every Friday. And it's a casual environment. It's still like a tournament structured, but there's nothing on the line. It's mostly practice, right? And having fun with friends. But then we're also going to be instituting, hopefully, a monthly that will be, you know, low-cost entry, but with a prize pot. And it'll be open to the general community, and it'll really be trying to find, you know, the best player in the Green Bay area, or, you know, from that tournament. It'll mostly be the Green Bay area, with the way that the Smash districts work in Wisconsin. Or another example is that we're looking to reach out to the Fortnite community. Fortnite is a weird game where it's not necessarily the most competitive by nature, just because, you know, there's a lot of random factors. But I would say there is skill to it, but it's also phenomenally popular with casual communities. I know from talking to people on campus, it's really popular here. And we want to focus Fortnite not necessarily on, you know, being like the most competitive game, but we want it to be something fun and casual that we can get a large amount of students on campus involved in.
Well, it's a really cheap entry-level game. You can play it on every platform except Nintendo, I believe.
Nope, it is on the Switch now.
Oh, it is. So you've got every platform, minus Mac. But actually, no, you can play it.
You can play it on Mac. It's just that Mac doesn't really run games too well.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is a perfect entry-level game for someone like me who plays one game and one game only. That is not Fortnite, but we won't go into that. So who's...
Yeah, now, can I get to my second part of that? So, as a club specifically, we want to be the home for gaming on campus in general. But I think another important question to ask is, why is it a club in the first place? So, I don't know if you were paying attention to the news last week, but Marquette is the first university in Wisconsin to open its doors to a varsity esports team. Now, this is not anything new, because ever since 2014, when Robert Morris announced their varsity program, colleges across the nation have been starting up these entry-level varsity teams that will give their students scholarships to come play specific games. The question is not why are we a club, but when are we going to be something more than a club? I think that especially with the way that the industry is shifting, it's something that will definitely be on the minds of incoming freshmen and other high schoolers who are a key demographic for a school like St. Norbert's.
Right. So here's another question I have for you. What benefit does the school have in recognizing your sport as a varsity sport? I mean, obviously they're not doing it now because you're a club.
Yeah.
But later on the line, what benefit would the school have in terms of how to... I'm trying to think of the word. entice people to come and play for your club? Mm-hmm. What benefit, like, obviously with football, you go to the national championship, and as you know, and you get that whole, and there's stats and pride, and obviously, mm-hmm. and that's definitely going to be in your club too. But what makes the esports club unique in its own sense?
So it's a different demographic. You know, traditional sports are always geared towards, you know, not that esports don't have to be physical, but football especially, you're looking for the most physically attuned players. Esports, there's a very specific kind of player that is striving to be the best, right? And it's a marketplace that I think that the school doesn't really touch in that sense. We have players here who are phenomenal, who are, you know, within the top 2% of a given player base, that are at that, you know, higher tier crop, but we're not really incentivized to play here. For example, we just picked up a recruit last week for our league team that is within, you know, the top 5% of players in that game, who had no idea that we had anything going on campus for a team until this semester, right? So it's a matter of when you market to that player base, you're going to see people jump on it. And I think especially in Wisconsin, with where Wisconsin Esports is at, it's at an all-time high. There are over 30 schools in Wisconsin, or 30 high schools, excuse me, that have varsity programs already. I've been in contact with their league, and these kids, this is what they do, right? This is their passion. And that's how you entice someone to, you know, invest their time into both, you know, their education, but also into their sport, into their craft. So reaching out to that player base, whether it be a scholarship level or just running, you know, a program here and giving it, you know, support as you would any other sport, right? That's what drives people to want to play for you. You know, I know when I was deciding where to go to college, Robert Morris was one of like maybe 10 colleges that had varsity, you know, scholarships at the time. And that was definitely, you know, in my mind. But I saw an opportunity at St. Norbert's, and that opportunity was to grow something here and to be part of that, you know, first wave of students that truly wants to build something with esports on campus. You know, build a community that can say, hey, we can compete just like anyone else. And then I'm just one case of that. You know, us and, you know, the almost 30-some guys that have already shown interest, you know, it's kind of the same story where, you know, this is something that we love to do. It's very enticing to us. We want to be able to do it for our college.
Well, and it's also a much more widely available thing to get into.
Yeah.
Now, granted, like, once you get into the higher end things, and that's a question for later on, you have to spend money to some degree in order to play at a competitive level in terms of your interface with the game. So your computer or your system or whatever. Because if you want to be good, you have to practice on your own time. So you can't be like, oh, I'm coming into the lab at 2:00 in the morning and I'm going to use you know, and you're not taking your rig over somewhere else all the time to play your thing. But, you know, in general, people can come in and build up their skill and from an entry level position and be very good, which I think is. And you can do it a little bit faster than playing football from fifth grade all the way up to college level.
I would put an asterisk on that statement.
Depends on the person.
not even just the person. I'd say that we're seeing a drastic shift in how esports are perceived. In years past, you know, and this is kind of one of the big issues Mark Cuban likes to bring up is, when's that next game coming out that's, you know, going to be at the top? We see with Overwatch, fantastic game. Hit the esports scene, sees a small decline. It's still very, very popular in the esports community, but you don't see the big boom. Like Fortnite came around, boom, 400,000 viewers on Twitch consistently across its different streamers.
Like my roommate just decided he wanted to start, you know, streaming.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and I remember when Fortnite came out, it was like, you had two or three guys streaming, you're like, oh, it's Fortnite, you know, it's just a 1v1 game. And then you get out there and you're like, holy cow, and now look how many people are doing it.
Yeah, and I think the main thing is that we're bridging, especially with League and Dota, we're bridging into this era where it's becoming, where it's going to be very shortly becoming a multi-generational sport. And that's where you see things start to get more complicated. That's when you truly get to see is this going to stick or not? And that's again, another reason why it can drive home so many connections. It's a good engine for storytelling, because it's what you do with your friends. It's what you can do, you know, once you be bridged to multi-generational. It's something that you can do with your kids. You can share those same experiences, depending on if we're going to see, will certain esports hit that decline? You know, I'd be thinking like, I guess a good analogy is like tennis, you know, back in its heyday, so many viewers and then interest dropped. Football even is now, especially with the concussion controversy over the last 10 years, you've seen a steady decline in the amount of kids that are actually playing football. The same kind of trends go for esports. You know, what is going to be at the top? What's going to fall off? And where are you going to be able to hit, you know, that core player base, you know, your core fans, and keep up, I guess, with the times on that.
Okay, cool. I think my next question then is, what do you do, as you said earlier, there was a multi-generational thing happening with League. If you have two players who are equally competitive and one of them is 40-some years old, not enrolled in college, how does your club interact with state organizations, and what's kind of the hierarchy there? And then how do you approach, you know, the generation gap when you're assigning a team? Because if you have someone who's better than anyone in college, you can't say, this one person is going to be on a team by himself and we're kicking them out to, you know, Timbuktu to play with 40-year-olds who have been playing the game since it came out.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting question. So you're kind of getting at, like, what's the structure, right? And it depends on the game.
Well, go through the list.
So we'll start with the top, League of Legends, right? I'd say it's the most popular collegiate game that there is right now. The league that we're competing in has over 2,500 students in it.
Wow.
And the structure for League is constantly changing. In the last 3 years, the developer of the game has put on a structured league for us where they have their set rules, their set game times, and how you have to operate through those games, how many players you can have on your team, how many substitutes you're allowed, all of that. So it's structured much like, you know, football would, where you'd have your schedule and you have your games that you have to be ready for at certain times. But there's also a weird interaction where we don't have an NCAA that governs all sports, right? So, and that's where the interaction with high school leagues becomes even more interesting, because there in Wisconsin, there actually is a startup that serves as, like, you know, what the NCAA would be for us, that governs all institutions that have varsity teams. League of Legends for collegiate has Riot Games, but we also, there's, and kind of this is new within the last 2 years, we have our own version of the NCAA that's called, it's the NACE, which is hoping to become essentially the NCAA for esports. And it's looking to govern, you know, have certain stipulations for teams that are under their name, mm-hmm. Even though they're not directly affiliated with the specific league that you're in. I think right now esports is still, especially collegially, is in this wild west where we need to see these certain companies and these certain organizations come together and have, you know, a set definition of what we're doing. Because I don't know if Collegiate League, like, or like the Collegiate League of Legends heads are in contact with NACE. For Rocket League, I know that they are. But, you know, it's, we have a lot of competing figureheads, because one of the most interesting parts of this is that games are not, games are privately owned. They're, you know, they're owned by companies.
Right.
It's not like anybody owns football or anybody right. owns soccer, right?
Yeah.
But there is a clear owner of League of Legends, right? And it's a matter of how open to the approach do these developers want to be for their games. We've seen Call of Duty have really, really, over the years, this really, really tight-knit approach to keeping their hands on their game. We've even seen it actually with Nintendo especially. They've actually straight up shut down tournaments being hosted on viewing platforms like Twitch. They just said, nope, this is our content. You cannot stream this. It's gotten better over the years because developers realize how powerful of an advertising tool esports are and how important it is for their player bases. But before we can like really say that there's like these set leagues, right? We need a governing body. We're starting to see that, but it's not completely set across every title and every school even. There's probably 110, I think, now schools in NIC, but it doesn't account for the, I think, 400-some schools that are involved in the Collegiate League of Legends season. Then that's also for a structured league, right? A game like Super Smash Bros. Will never, I mean, I won't say never, but operates on a tournament-to-tournament kind of idea. You know, it's actually Wisconsin's pretty well known for its Smash tournament. We have in the Wisconsin Dells every summer, Smash and Splash attracts over 2,000 participants every year. But that's only one tournament put on by a specific organizer. There's countless other tournaments every year at both the national level and at the local level. So you don't really see, you know, schools versus schools. You see individuals against individuals. They might represent a school, or they might represent a specific professional organization. But it's not set up in a way that you see the same interaction that you would with, say, a League of Legends team, who it's more structured in that sense.
So I guess, what do you think in terms of this governing body thing? Would you want it to be mixed? Obviously, you want it to have the same power of a governing body as the WIAA or NCAA. But on the same token, do you want it to be that nationally regulated by those particular organizations? Do you want the WIAA to recognize esports and then be in charge of it? Because what I see is it's a totally new playing field for that particular kind of governing body. And to bring on a whole new subset of people, it might cause controversy. And not only in your sport, but it might cause stuff in other sports too.
Yeah, I think just last week, NCAA actually held a conference with esports as one of its panels. And the president of the NCAA, I can't remember his name, can't remember it because he said that NCAA will never be in support of, you know, quote-unquote, violent games. So it'd be, you know, thinking of Call of Duty as an esport, right? Call of Duty might be a little bit gory, right? Sometimes the images that it is displaying aren't always the most PG. But
neither is football.
Neither is football, neither is soccer, you know. There's all these little things that go on where it's like, you're being very judgmental in a sense that I'd say it's an outdated view. And I don't think that esports necessarily needs a governing body in the same way. But I think it would be operating a different system. Because I think, honestly, the way that NCAA is run right now, and that, you know, WIA, they're not always best suited for the players. I think what you need to see happen, if you want to see a truly structured and organized, you know, well league, there's interaction between the developer of the game, because obviously it's their game, they should have a voice, some third party, and the players. It's got to be everyone has an equal, not really an equal say, but everybody's voices need to be heard when it comes to how that game is running. I think a good example of this is, should collegiate players in football, you know, with all of the money that's being tossed around right now, should they be paid for their faces being used?
Right.
For all of the money that they're able to bring in? Because their personality is just like the rest, you know, just like NFL players.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
There are still personalities that are bringing in millions upon millions of dollars.
Right. I mean, personally, the only reason I tune into the Wisconsin football games is because I know someone on that team.
Yep.
I could care less about the University of Wisconsin's football organization, but because I know that person, that's why I would watch. Probably the same reason why I would watch, for instance, you play on esports, just because I know you. But then you come into the deal like, oh, the developer wants
such this a cut. Cut.
You know, yeah. the people who make the computers and the components in the computers, we want this cut, and then...
Yep. I'd say, as it currently stands, I think that, and I've said this for years, esports has been grassroots since its beginning. But there comes a certain time where grassroots doesn't hold for the long term. So you need to maintain a balance between a grassroots feeling and also having a strong enough structure that'd be, you know, developed.
One word.
Sure.
NASCAR.
Yep, I figured you'd go there.
So, okay, my next question. What, so obviously you have video games, you're playing video games. How do you play these video games? What kind of machines do you use? Does it depend on the game? I know some stuff's console-based, which would be your Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo Switch. And then you have your PC stuff.
Yep.
But on top of that, is there any room for outdated machines like the N64, the 360, the PS1, 2, 3 generations?
Well, I'll tell you right now that Super Smash Bros. Melee for the GameCube has been played competitively for 17 years straight, and it is still the most viewed Super Smash Bros. For tournaments. And those players, I mean, a lot of the names you see now are new, but some of them have been playing the game since it came out. You know, some of the, I mean, I'd say like during the like 2012-ish, a lot of the players that were like young kids when the game came out, or teenagers, were the ones that were professionals in that era. We're kind of in a new era of Smasher now where there's some new faces coming up. It's really nice to see. And also Smash is another really good example for a multi-generational esport, because you see new faces, you know, this new wave of players coming in. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily defined based on the newest hardware or anything like that. It really depends where the best competition can be found. That's why, for example, and I love going back to Smash, when Brawl came out, it was just a bad game competitively. Sure, you can have fun with pretty much any game, but for the players that were in Melee, a game that takes years to hone your skill at, they're mad because it's like, this new game is slow, it's clunky, it's not good. So they didn't go to Brawl. But then Smash 4 came out, and it's pretty good. Still some issues, and it gained competitive popularity. Now, with Ultimate coming out, you still see a huge community for Melee. But Ultimate is also blowing up so far because it's not maybe as skillful as Melee, but it's still very competitive. Additionally, like when it comes to like what you want to play or where you can play it, really, I mean, some games are specified to certain arenas. Like League of Legends is PC. Call of Duty is a PS4 exclusive, just due to licensing deals between Activision and PlayStation. But you still see competitive players that are even on PC or competitive players that are on Xbox. It's just that the main leagues, whether it be the professional scene or the collegiate scene, will be found on PlayStation. See a game like Fortnite, most people are going to be on PC just because there's a clear advantage between someone that can maneuver a mouse and keyboard to someone that can play on a controller. You know, controllers are more limited with having to use your thumbs. But you also see really good console Fortnite players that can even keep up with the PC players. So really, it depends on what game you're in. But I can guarantee you, no matter what console you're on, if you're playing PC, there is always an esport that is open and available to be played.
Good to know. What do you see as the next big boom of games? So if we start, we'll say
the 80s, actually.
Okay, start from there.
Yep.
And give me the trends. And then once you get to the 2019, what do you see the next couple years look like as terms of...
Yep. So I'll go strictly from a competitive sense.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the gaming industry as a whole has a lot of room for evolution. But speaking from a competitive standpoint specifically, The '80s, we saw fighting games blow up. I'd say the first big wave of what we now would say esports was just going to an arcade with your friends, putting down quarters and playing Street Fighter and finding out who is the better Street Fighter player. Then we get to the '90s, internet becomes a thing. We see games like Quake, these first person shooter games that, finally we have the internet and finally like connect with people from miles and miles away. And Quake really blew up as a competitive title. I'd say some of the first North American esports players that truly became like superstars came from Quake. This trend still continued into the early 2000s with first person shooters kind of being like the North, at least for North America, being the cream of the crop of competition. Meanwhile, we see over in South Korea, which as of starting in 2000, esports became its national pastime, all the way back in 2000, with an RTS game, StarCraft. We also saw World of Warcraft being a pretty popular title for competition, but speaking North America exclusively, 2000 was like the heyday for FPS. We saw Counter-Strike explode. Counter-Strike was amazing for competition back then. Halo was actually on USA. Like, it was picked up by USA. There was ESPN articles and ESPN rankings, stuff like that, for their tournaments, which were all across the nation. You go back and watch his old videos, and you see these crowds for Halo in 2008, and you're like, really?
Yeah.
When Halo 3 came out, it was one of the best titles that there was. Then, obviously, towards the later part, you know, getting into early 2010, 2012, around there, Call of Duty really took up. But then this is also around the time that League of Legends became a beta, or went into beta, and then Dota became a thing. We saw MOBAs just blow up. League of Legends had an active player base of over 100 million at one point. I think this was season 3, so, you know, or in season 9, 6 years ago. Over 100 million players across the world. Dota 2 as well. Massive player bases. And really, we've been in this kind of post-MOBA era, which I think MOBAs were one of the catalysts for esports even being close or really bridging us into this age of varsity teams, scholarships, professional teams. Now, in the last year and a half, 2 years, we've seen the Battle Royale genre really spike up. You just see developers making Battle Royale games because they know they're going to sell. This one person versus 99 other people really captures people because it's you versus the world, or it's you and your squad against the world. And there is a degree of skill to each of those games. Next, what's going to happen, you know, 2019 on, is really hard to say. I think that we're at a point where you have your top echelon of MOBAs, your top echelons of FPS games. RTS games are dying a little bit, but I still think StarCraft can make a huge comeback. It has one of the most historied scenes in all of esports. Battle Royales are starting on their ascension to becoming some of the most competitive games. It all depends on how the developers want to push their game and what the player base makes of it.
So, here's one that I've noticed that I know you haven't mentioned, but I know competitive racing games are, like, racing sims in general are astronomically overpriced. We're going to start with the way you get into them, everything else. But with the advent of, you know, I mean, I guess we have Gran Turismo and Forza for PlayStation and Xbox, respectively. But do you think that there's a competitive scene in the realm for them or for other games that aren't necessarily come off as competitive on a multiplayer scene, but as in like a just a standard single player mode?
Yeah, I think that, well, I mean, I'd still say that it's multiplayer, it's just not multiple people, you know, doing the same goal, or, you know, as a team. You know, you're still 1v X amount of people in a racing game or in a racing sim, and there is a dedicated community for racing sims. It's just entry price is pretty high, and the player bases are not there yet. There could be some game that comes out that just, I mean, actually, really good point here. Rocket League,
yeah,
is, you know, the sports racer kind of aesthetic with, you know, it's soccer, right? Like. We see games like that just blow up It just depends on that player base. And I think another scene to bring into this, right? And the reason racing is kind of a interesting one is because there's this whole kind of subgenre of games that's like these realistic games, right? So we have racing, we have football games, we have hockey, basketball, baseball. And over the last 2 years, those games have also, in their own right, become gigantic esports. FIFA over in Europe is
nuts.
It is insane. The amount of competitions they have there and the structure that they have. I mean, you see actual soccer teams picking up players. I know that Paris Saint-Germain has a couple of FIFA players, and was it the what's the other? PEG? Is that the other big soccer one? There's you know, a couple of those big soccer games where you're having these teams, these traditional sports teams, pick up individual players to play alongside their actual soccer team. You see, actually, this was as of last year, the NBA made an NBA 2K league.
Yeah, and 2K's been huge.
2K's huge stateside. And you see a professional league that, you know, mirrors the professional NBA league that's for their video game instead. Madden has a huge series of tournaments where, you know, you see different players that are sponsored by different... I don't think there's currently an NFL team that's sponsoring a specific player, but you see traditional esports organizations pick up these players for Madden. And they might not get the most viewership compared to, you know, League of Legends. You watch an LCS game, there's anywhere from 200,000 to 500,000 viewers on average. You watch the NBA League, and I mean, I've seen it cap like 10,000, 10,000, 15,000, maybe 20. But that's still viewership. That's still thousands of people who are tuning in, that's the word. it really depends on those communities. And if they want a game to succeed as an esport, it comes down to first players organizing it, developers getting it support, and a league structure potentially coming in. I know that there are a ton of racing game tournaments out there. It's just finding them, and if you want to compete in them, compete in them. Show that scene what you got.
Okay. I think we covered the history of esports and everything pretty well. Let's come back to St. Norbert. Who runs the club?
So, Brett Malitzkin is the president. I am the vice president. Trevor Shout is secretary, and Michael Wagner is the treasurer. But I wouldn't say that we're running it. Right, you know, we might be the officers. We might be the ones that said, "Hey, let's get this, you know, make it an official club, and try to push for some school support." I'd say everyone in the group has an equal say in what's going on. What we want to do is we don't want to look down and say, "All right, this is what we're doing." We want to say, "Hey, guys, what can we do?" We want this to be an open and inviting experience for anyone that has interest in gaming in any fashion. We want to see what we can do. I know that I've had people come up to me saying, "Hey, we want a Call of Duty team. Hey, we want an Overwatch team." And we're trying to see if we can find enough support for it, we'll run it and we'll try to get it into these intercollegiate leagues. And if we can't, we still want to be open to those communities and have them involved in our, you know, in our environment. Because Overwatch, even if we don't have a team here, I would love to sit down, get a group of guys together and have a viewing party for the Overwatch League. Because I love watching Overwatch, even though I don't play it. So it's a matter of bolstering this community that's not, you know, separated, that says, "Oh, your game sucks." We've seen this actually between, even at a professional level, between Halo and Call of Duty, there's a big rivalry where they both were being run by the same tournament organizer, but one kept getting popular and more popular and more popular, the other one kept declining. And you see tensions between those players. We don't want any of that. We want everybody to just come have some fun with us and play some games.
So, if I'm just joining, do I need to bring anything? Do I have, like, if I want to get into a game, how do I go about it? Like, for instance, I have a Mac right here on the table. This is my only computer. How do I, and I don't have a gaming system that can run Overwatch. Do I just show up and you guys have those free nights where you can play, or will you get me in touch with someone who can maybe show you what it's like to play the game every once in a while, and then you can determine whether or not to buy your own system?
Yep. Depends on the game. I think at an entry level, or like the most available level, Smash. Like, all you need is a TV and a console, and odds are someone has both. That's why we're running Smash Fridays the way we are, because anyone can show up. There'll always be Ultimate there. Hopefully Melee, if I can get my old CRT out there. But for really, it does depend from game to game, because League, I mean, you need a semi-decent computer. I mean, honestly, your general college workbook can run League unless it's a Mac, because Macs are very non-gaming friendly. But I think, you know, for our meetings, right, it's not necessarily about playing. We have work to be done. We have events that we want to put on, is what we're trying to do, right? But we're looking to host events. Like, if we're looking to have a Fortnite tournament that's open to the entire campus, we want anybody, right? Anybody that can play, that wants to, enter, you're in. Plain and simple. We're going to, you know, Smash, all you need, show up, have a controller, plug into whoever's playing, right? There will be stuff available, but moving forward in the future, you know, the goal would be to hopefully get a space that is dedicated to, you know, esports efforts, right, for teams, and have that available for students already. It is a decent investment.
To say the least.
It's a decent investment. I wouldn't say it's as big as some of the other programs that a lot of colleges run. And it's also most of the time a one-time thing, because once you get the equipment, you know, albeit there can be some issues, but for the most part,
It'll last you 10 years.
You can build computers that will last you at least 5 years, right, to be like really, really good, and then you'll start seeing some issues 5 years down the road sometimes. But, you know, the computer I have, I put, you know, $1,000 investment into it. I'm going to have this computer with the same exact parts, and it'll serve you my purposes for League of Legends specifically for the entire time that League is available, just because of how the game runs. It depends on certain titles, obviously, but for most esports games, they're trying to be the most accessible to everyone. So it's not going to be like, you know, Far Cry or Call of Duty, where, you know, you can have these higher graphic settings where it's like, oh, wow, that looks beautiful. You know, most esports games are there to look good, but you're there for a purpose. You're there to play that game and win that game.
Right.
But yeah, I think the next step, I mean, just like, just looking at schools around us, I know Illinois College in our, you know, in the Midwest Conference, they have a team as well. They have their own facility. Trine, who we played in the first round of playoffs for football this year, they have a beautiful facility. Marquette's going to be doing the same thing. You know, having a space for your community to gather and have that equipment available, it is the ideal to have, because it really gives you a home, you know, for your teams to grow. And I think that's really important. You know, football, you got that stadium where you can look at it, like you have your weight room, right, where you and your team bond, practice, and really grow closer. I think that's really, really important for any team of any sport or esport.
Right, right. So I guess another question I have for you is, with your current enrollment of people in your club, if you were to have a room, what percent of it is PC dedicated? And I mean not your personal machines that you can bring in, but yep, machines owned through the school for yep, the enjoyment of the club. And what percentage of it is consoles? What percentage of it is games? How many TVs? What kind of numbers are we looking at?
So the way I see it, like, if you want to start up, like, your basic program, you at least have 12 computers, right? And obviously getting just monitors for consoles isn't, you know, that much more. But at least having 12 setups for PC, especially since most esports are, you know, centered on PC, you'll see a lot better results, because I think the most players you have on a team for any given esport is 6. And that being Overwatch, or I think Rainbow Six Siege is also 6v6. You don't see much more than that. So you have enough for a, you know, an A team and a B team, right? As essentially the goal you'd have for like PC. And console, you have either you just have it open, or I think the highest is 5v5 for console based esports, which is Call of Duty now. They moved to 5v5 format just this year. Other than that, like, really, I mean, it really is up to what the player base wants. You know, with our numbers currently, you wouldn't see too much more. I know similar programs, like at Trine, I think they have maybe 20 setups in a room that they have, and a couple screens for like a VOD review. But overall, you know, it's not anything too crazy.
Right, right. And it's also a logistical issue. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You've got to get 10 gigabit internet in there if you want. And that all comes back to the hardware. You need to have it wired for high-speed internet.
Yep.
You need to have it good graphics cards
and
all this other stuff. And, you know, that. And for a program like yours, you know, 12 sounds like... I mean, it's, you know, spend 50... buy 50 rigs at... You know, X amount per piece.
I mean, for us, that's not anything we're looking at. Like, for us, where we're at, it's straight up, we, as the players, have our equipment already. We make do with what we have. You know, and that's all that we really want to do anyways, is just work with what we have fun with that, and look to grow from there. I know one thing that we're really, really pushing for is doing a high school invitational over the summer in, you know, working with the Wisconsin Esports Association, the Wisconsin High School Esports Association, is how I think that they have named their organization. We want to work with them and see what we can do. Get a bunch of the high school teams all out here. You know, it gets them acquainted to campus, which is really good for the school itself, but it's also good for us to try to, you know, get players out here when they come to college, so we can continue to develop the teams that we have. But and something like that, right? It would be you have to bring your own equipment. Most of the tournaments that I've gone to collegiately, you bring your own equipment. For PC games, that's a little bit tough, but it's always worth it. For something like Smash, it's easy to just show up with, you know, a controller, maybe bring a GameCube, a Wii, a Nintendo Switch, and you're all ready to go.
Well, and the thing with consoles is, besides illegal modifications to controllers, because the last console that I played on was Xbox 360, and you could put some fast triggers on that. But besides that, all consoles are essentially the same. And I know people are like, oh, my controller is better than yours, but...
I mean, there are like tournament-sanctioned controllers that you have quote-unquote mods. They have additional buttons on them, but they are tournament-sanctioned these days. But yeah, for most consoles, like, you're running the same equipment, unless you do what a lot of people have been doing with online Call of Duty and getting a keyboard and mouse and using that instead. Yes, because Xbox and I believe PlayStation are now compatible with USB mice and keyboards. It's called, like, you look at the Reddit threads and you see, oh, this guy was keyboarding me, yada yada. You're legally, like, in the rules for competitive COD, no keyboards, no mice, for, you know, PlayStation, obviously, for consoles.
Right.
But, you know, you're still at that same playing ground for the most part. The biggest thing for, like, League is that you are running on different equipment. For our collegiate league, like, we have people playing on laptops, which generally aren't good, which generally are not good. And they might have FPS drops, whereas, like, you know, someone...
What's an FPS?
Frames per second.
Okay, just want to clarify.
So you know, you have these drops in essentially your graphic quality, or this, you know, your computer actually being able to push out the data that it's, you know, being subjected to on your screen. That happens actually with one of our teammates, who sometimes his computer just can't handle it. So you know, when you're playing this very large collegiate league, you know that people are on, you're on various different settings, and that's just something that we have to deal with currently. And that's obviously, it's an incomplete structure because of that, but it's something that we just got to deal with right now. We're still having fun all the same.
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear. So, last question. What can I do to become a part of it? Just show up on a Friday Smash and say, hey?
That's somewhere you can start. We have a Facebook page. We have Twitter, Discord channel, YouTube, Twitch, all of that. I think on Facebook, it's the SNC Esports and Gaming Association. Twitter is at SNC_esports. Twitch and YouTube are both Green Knight Esports. And the Discord link is available on the Facebook page. Really, you just hit anyone up. We're not technically an official club yet until mid-February when the board approves it. But we're still getting the community ties threaded right now at the beginning of the semester. So when, you know, we are official and we start getting funding for events, we can hit it right on the head, right out of the gates. Additionally, really, if anyone has any ideas that want to be presented to, you know, the group, we don't have a set meeting time yet because, you know, we're still working on that since we're not officially approved. But we're looking to get meetings regularly on Thursday nights, probably sometime before 8. Meetings will be anywhere from half an hour to an hour. And that's just for logistic purposes to get events planned, get ideas out there, so the group can move forward and actually get things done on campus. We don't want to be a group that kind of sits around and does its own thing. We want to be present in the St. Norbert campus community. I think that's the biggest goal, is we want to be a community here. We want to have fun with as many people as possible.
I agree. I think that is something that you personally do very well, and I think that's something that your organization will do very, very well. Well, that's all the questions I have. Is there anything else that we missed that you would like to talk about?
No, I think we hit up on everything. The only other thing that I had to say is this weekend, our League of Legends team is taking on Illinois Wesleyan University. The date is not set. We're working with their coaches to try to schedule for either Friday night or Sunday afternoon. Our social media will update when we do end up having a set time. But that's the next big game that we have for us. We started out 1-0 in the season, and this is probably one of the best chances we have at a pretty stellar season.
That's awesome. Thank you very much, Zach, for coming in, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Jerry.